The patient is acute. The rhythm is wide, fast, but not quite regular. Is the rhythm VT, that is ventricular tachycardia, or is it supraventricular with a wide QRS complex? We are told to assume that the cause of a regular wide tachycardia in which P waves are not seen is VT until proven otherwise. This is because statistically, even before you look at the ECG, at least 80% of these rhythms will be VT. And if the patient is an older adult with underlying heart disease and has a QRS morphology that does not resemble any form of known conduction defect, then the chance that the rhythm is VT goes up even more, to well over 90%. But the likelihood that a wide tachycardia is VT is very different if the wide rhythm is clearly not regular. Two factors contribute to making this distinction even more difficult. When we are trying to decide if a not quite regular wide tachycardia is VT or a supraventricular tachycardia in which the QRS complex happens to be wide. First, to clarify that when talking about regularity with VT, we are referring to monomorphic VT, in which QRS complexes from one beat to the next all look pretty much the same. This is very different than polymorphic VT, in which both the rate and morphology of QRS complexes may vary from one beat to the next. But even with monomorphic VT, it's important to appreciate that this is not always a regular rhythm. At times, monomorphic VT may begin with what's known as a warm-up period that shows a gradual acceleration of the wide QRS rhythm until establishment of a regular VT. There can also be a cool-down period with gradual rather than abrupt slowing as the run of VT ends. And, on occasion, there can be some irregularity throughout the tracing. Monomorphic VT usually is pretty regular, but there may be some variation in the R-to-R interval. The second factor that complicates assessment of a not-quite-regular wide tachycardia in which P waves are absent is that when atrial fibrillation is rapid, the rhythm may look regular for short periods of time, and since the QRS is wide, when this happens, then AFib with a rapid ventricular response may look like VT. What to do? Realizing that nothing is perfect, I have found the following concepts helpful. First, AFib tends to be irregularly irregular throughout much, if not most, of the tracing. Even when the rate is rapid, there will often be at least slight variability from one beat to the next. With practice, you can recognize this at a glance. I realize that you will not always have the luxury of pulling out calipers at the bedside of a symptomatic patient in a wide tachycardia. But after the situation has stabilized, the only way to really get good at recognizing subtle variations in R2R intervals is by measuring lots of tracings with calipers, until your eye gets accustomed to recognizing these subtle differences even without calipers. It's usually different with VT. Although I've emphasized just a moment ago that monomorphic VT will not always be perfectly regular, it is usually not nearly as variable from one beat to the next as AFib tends to be. Key point, look for the break in the rhythm. By this I mean that both wide and narrow tachycardias often manifest a short relative pause in the rhythm, which is often due to an early occurring beat. The key for identifying subtle underlying telltale atrial activity is to focus on these short pauses, because doing so often provides essential clues to the rhythm. Your best chance for seeing underlying atrial activity that had been hidden within wide QRS complexes and wide T waves is when the rhythm slows down a little bit, even if this period of slowing lasts for only a brief moment. Next, finding a prior tracing on the patient may prove invaluable. This is because if you can find an earlier ECG on the patient that shows an identical widened QRS morphology during sinus rhythm, then you have proven that the wide tachycardia is supraventricular, with QRS widening from pre-existing bundle branch block. By the same token, always get a post-conversion tracing once sinus rhythm is reestablished. This is because you may sometimes be successful in cardioverting the patient back to sinus rhythm, either electrically or with an antiarrhythmic medication, without yet knowing for certain what the rhythm was during the wide tachycardia. There may be subtle clues to the etiology of the wide tachycardia that only become apparent after sinus rhythm has been restored, when you finally have a chance to compare what QRS morphology was in all 12 leads during the wide tachycardia with what the QRS now looks like in all 12 leads after conversion to Sinus Rhythm. An especially helpful clue in such cases is if after conversion to Sinus Rhythm, you now see a PVC, which manifests identical QRS morphology as was seen for the wide QRS complexes during the wide tachycardia. This is a way to retrospectively prove that the wide tachycardia was indeed VT. Finally, there is the appearance of QRS morphology. I've discussed and illustrated this in detail in previous blog posts on the wide tachycardia, so I'll limit my comments here to a few final points. An extreme frontal plane axis during the wide tachycardia strongly favors VT. I'll emphasize that when I say there is extreme axis deviation, I mean that the QRS complex must be entirely negative in either standard lead 1 or in lead AVF. The finding of even a small R wave negates the use of frontal plane axis as a discriminating criterion. Left bundle branch block morphology, as seen in supraventricular rhythms, manifests a monomorphic R wave in lateral leads and a predominantly negative QRS in anterior leads. I like to look for how steep the downslope of anterior S waves is, because if you see nearly vertical descent of anterior S waves, this strongly favors left bundle branch block conduction and a supraventricular etiology. I will emphasize that if downslope of these anterior S waves is not truly steep, that is, nearly a straight line down, that this is no longer helpful as a discriminating factor, and the rhythm could be either an SVT or VT. Finally, typical right bundle branch block morphology manifests an RSR prime pattern in lead V1, in which the S wave should descend below the baseline, and the slender R prime deflection should make for a taller right rabbit ear that is clearly greater in amplitude than the slender initial R wave. If you see this very specific morphology, then this is very predictive of a supraventricular rhythm. That said, many wide tachycardia rhythms with right bundle branch block morphology do not manifest this strict triphasic pattern, with S wave descending below the baseline and with slender, taller right rabbit ear, in which case morphology does not help. The last part of this pattern that predicts right bundle branch block aberration is that lateral leads 1 and V6 should manifest a fairly slender upright R-wave deflection with a wide terminal S-wave. I would not diagnose right bundle branch block aberration without seeing wide terminal S-waves in these lateral leads.